Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning. Right, this week the League One and Two playoffs continued, and we saw the start of the Championship playoffs with Leeds United hoping to gain promotion through this route. However, let's start with Huddersfield Town, who announced the departure of André Breitenreiter following the club's relegation. This was then swiftly followed by the news that ex-Barnsley manager Michael Duff had been appointed as his successor. Now, what did you make of Breitenreiter's relatively short time at the club, and how crucial will it be for the club to ensure that Michael Duff can get going as soon as possible, Leon?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look back at Breitenreiter's time in charge, I liked him. I thought he was a capable manager. Was it? Only there for 13 games, 2 wins. But I think when you look back and the dust has settled, probably the biggest service that he will have given Huddersfield is probably by what he said in the final few press conferences and post-match press conferences as well. He really did call out, without going into specific names, or I think quite a few Huddersfield fans were capable of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. Just calling out a lot of players for their attitudes. He said a lot of very candid and revealing things. Said that he's not seen anything like it in terms of behaviour and day-to-day conduct at times that he'd not seen in 30 years in the game. And that's a big statement, isn't it? And I admired him for his candour. Stuart's obviously spoke to him a few times as well. I think he was straightforward. He wasn't used to the lack of general professionalism that he was used to at his clubs, especially in Germany. But I think that the main thing he will be remembered for were those comments ultimately. And it's the baton's been passed on to Michael Duff, and I think it's a very sensible and through an appointment of the decision making of the new look board hierarchy at Huddersfield. It's not too far away from it, years since I've been in charge. Fair to say it's been questionable, but this one it has the main, we'll have to see, but it has the makings of being the shrewdest yet. I mean, Duff knows the club, he knows Mark Cartwright very well. They were known to each other from being in the involved in the same agency, so Duff won't be going in blind. He's someone who's been considered before by the Huddersfield board. I think there's almost a feeling, really, that it's almost wish they could have done this maybe this time. Well, not maybe not this time last year, because he was still involved in the playoffs, but in the close season of 2023, that would have been probably a better timing as far as Huddersfield are concerned. Obviously, they made a decision to stick with Neil Warnock, and then things quickly unravelled, and there's a lot of talk about the pre-season, this, that and other as well, and it started off the chain of events that's ended in relegation. So it's just glad from a Huddersfield perspective that Duff's in place. It might be a little bit, a year too late. He's had his spell at Swansea, which I always, it's all right to speak with hindsight, but I always thought it was a little bit of a strange one, in the respect that there's all the talk about the Swansea way of playing, heavily possession-based, and it just didn't look a natural fit. Whereas I think with Huddersfield, with the sort of pressing elements that Duff has been successful with it in Barnsley, that sort of way of playing suits, it'll suit Huddersfield, it's a natural fit. So that ticks a box. And it's very similar. I mean, I wrote a comment piece for the paper on Wednesday, there's a lot of correlations between when he walked into Barnsley and obviously coming into Huddersfield. It's a club that have had a desperately poor season. Morale's pretty low. The club's at a low ebb. And he'll be greeted with a similar sketch. There'll be quite a few players who will want away. It was the same when Barnsley went down. There was a summer with, you know, Coley Woodrow left. There was Callum Britton. There were quite a few others as well. Mikkel Helic, who could be one of the players that he inherits. So it wasn't a straightforward summer. So I think the fact that Duff has been here before, he'll spot the signs. He spoke when he came in at Barnsley, being on high alert. The first thing he's going to do is look at players, look at the body language in pre-season, really see who wants to be here, who doesn't. Yeah. And I think he'll be prepared for whatever happens. And but I think the top and bottom of it, I think it's a pretty good appointment. He knows the level. He's a good builder of cultures. He's a good guy, and I'm sure his comments will chime with Huddersfield supporters. You know, he talks straightforward sort of language that a lot of supporters in these parts will take to straight away. So yeah, I'm pleased with Huddersfield. No messing about, really, wasn't it? Obviously, they got the decision about Brighton right. They fairly clear that Nagel would have liked to have kept him, but they always had the contingency plan in reserve of Duff. They've done it really quickly. He went in at Barnsley in mid-June. He was racing against the clock a little bit, and he still managed to get them into shape. Now he's got the extra time at Huddersfield. He comes in, you know, in mid-May. He can get his feet under the table and do his research, really get things ready for pre-season. And Huddersfield needed to do something positive in the aftermath of an awful rotten season, and fair play to them that.
Positive and quick, as you said, you both alluded to. It was really important that he's able to hit the ground running, and you know, in before even the retain list is sorted out. Yeah. It's such a big help. You know, we saw how Leeds last season were waiting on the takeover before Daniel Farke came in. How you know, other clubs, Sheffield Wednesday were obviously set back by Darren Moore, you know, leaving when he did. It's a big help, and I totally agree with Leon. I think it's a really shrewd appointment. I think when you're a club of Huddersfield standing, you know, a club that's been in the Premier League fairly recently, a club that's got a very proud history, albeit, you know, those league titles were in the distant past. I think the real issue with League One, probably more than any of the other leagues in the system, is to respect the division. I think you've really got to go in and you've got to accept that you're a League One club for a reason. You've got to act like a League One club. I think sometimes too many of these big clubs, you know, we've seen it with Leeds, we've seen it with both Sheffield clubs, you know, lots of big clubs have got tangled in that division. I think by sort of looking too far ahead too soon, trying to act like Championship clubs before they're Championship clubs. And I think it was really important that Huddersfield got someone in who knew League One. And you know, for all Brighton Wright's qualities, and he clearly got a great CV in Germany, he didn't know that division. You know, he clearly didn't regard himself, you know, quite rightly with his background as a third tier manager. So it was never likely to work, you know, no matter the goodwill on either side. So I think it's for the best that he's come to a quick decision. Everybody's been able to move on. And as I say, they've brought in a manager who, as Leon says, he's got all the qualities he needs for the division. It cost him at Swansea, but there's no sort of high-minded ideas about trying to play over pretty football. You know, he doesn't play ugly football either, don't get me wrong, but it's just what's needed for the level sort of thing. There's no getting ahead of himself. There's a real honesty. And as Leon says, they need to sift through pretty quickly and work out those players who think they're too big for League One as well and get them out the door. I'm sure that'll be a fairly quick process because they'll want to make themselves known and moved on. But yeah, I think it's a really good appointment. I think he's a really good fit for the area. As Leon says, the sort of common sense approach, it kind of fits in with how we see ourselves as Yorkshiremen, and you know how we like our football clubs to be run. Obviously, he grew up in Beedale, so there's a we've obviously had a bit of an impact on him. And yeah, there's just a straightforwardness about him, and there's an understanding of what's needed, and there'll be no sort of airs and graces trying to be this or that. He'll just get his head down and get them out of the division, and that's a challenge that Birmingham City, for example, will have to get their head around, and it might be that Huddersfield can steal a march on them and some of the other big clubs by just, as I say, just acting like a League One club, signing players who know the division, yeah, who know the football that needs to be played, and getting out of there as soon as possible. Because, you know, I know for a fact that Rotherham will be operating on those lines. They're not a club with Steve Evans in charge that you worry about them in that respect. So that's already one big promotion rival. Plus, you've got the teams who have gone close, including Barnsley, depending on who they get in. It's important. It's important Huddersfield do hit the ground running, and that they don't have somebody with the L plates on.
Yeah, I mean, they've both been pretty quick, haven't they? I mean, Rotherham a different one. They've,
yeah,
Tony Stewart identified Steve Evans very quickly, and that looks a natural fit there. And it's obviously the same with Huddersfield. I mean, you look at Michael Duff in the last few years. He was only at Barnsley for a season, and obviously a short spell at Swansea that didn't work out. But if you look at his overall career in terms of playing as well, he's been very loyal and sort of stuck around for the long haul. You look, his playing career with the likes of Burnley and Cheltenham, and managing Cheltenham as well. I think it's one of those, if everything's in place and things are growing, is a manager who will stick around in the medium to long term. I think the frustrations at Barnsley were, he did an excellent job in the year he was there, but I just think that behind the scenes there wasn't the structure maybe that he'd expected and wanted. I mean, ironically now, they made some appointments earlier this year in the back room at Barnsley structurally that maybe it's a bit more sound than it was, but he was, you know, you felt that he was craving that sort of sense of order behind the scenes, and he will have that at Huddersfield. It's a decent structure, and yeah, he's someone who strikes me, if everything's in place, he's a builder of clubs. Obviously, the first aim is to hopefully get Huddersfield out of the division at the first time of asking. But yeah, he just looks it looks a natural fit. And for his sake, he'll have some of the advantages that maybe he didn't have at Barnsley, and what were sort of fairly sort of big in him deciding that he wanted to go away at the end of that season when then Swansea came calling. So I just think it's a very shrewd appointment by Huddersfield, and it's very timely as well, and it's exactly what was needed.
Yeah, it immediately makes Huddersfield a lot more serious contenders to bounce back next season, I would say.
And I think that, you know, his background at Cheltenham as well, he's somebody who will, obviously Barnsley put it, that he won't disrespect the division. You know, he's been at Cheltenham and had it all on to get promoted from League 2 to League 1, so he'll know every nook and cranny about the division, and he will not get carried away or anything like that. He's just not in his DNA anyway as a person. So I think that Huddersfield fans can, you know, at the end of a really tough season, they've got something to look forward to and cling to.
And next we turn to the Premier League, where we saw Sheffield United fall to a narrow 1-0 defeat. Unfortunately, in the process, they claimed an unwanted Premier League record by conceding over 100 goals during the course of a single season. However, in your report of the game, Leon, you stated that the Blades showed heart during this game. What was the rest of your assessment of the game?
Yeah, I mean, Stuart's seen a lot more of Sheffield United than I have. Probably unfortunate is probably the word, isn't it? I've seen the odd beating up, but Stuart's seen a fair few more. But yeah, I think it looked to me as if it was almost a bit of elements of the season in a nutshell. There was heart, and they had a go, and the spirit was there. But, you know, Chris Wilder said it quite a lot, hasn't he? They're non-negotiables, really, in any side that he manages. He expects that, not just from his own side either, from any professional footballer. You know, you've got to do that. And I watched them, especially going forward. They had a lot of the ball in the second half. Everton seemed to me just to sort of clock off a little bit, and they got in front, and they probably thought to themselves, well, you know, we can control the game from here. And yeah, they huffed and they puffed, but they just lack that decision making, that final cross, that guile. Call it what you will, and you sort of look at that side now, and you look at them for next season. I mean, they'll be Brayton Diakole won't be there. Archer will go back to Villa. People like Ollie McBurney, who's first level, who's going to score the goal for them next season? And I sort of looked at the side. They've got a few players who, you know, hopefully they can build it around next season. They are blasters of this world. Hopefully Bogle, a few others. But I just sort of watched them, and fair play to the Sheffield United supporters as well. They were with them all game. They were singing positively all game, and it was, you know, it's a tribute to them because they've had a desperately poor season, and it just sort of showed to me how much they've got to do in the summer. Really, there's going to be a big turnaround, a big reset. By the time we come out, there might be more details about the retain list, but I think it's fair to say that quite a few of the sort of promotion heroes, if you like, of previous successful campaigns, this seems a natural break for them and a time to change it around, and just so much work to do in the summer. There's not going to be a lot of money to work with by the sound of it, and you know, one or two of the bigger name players could maybe depart as well. So I just, sort of watching it, I just thought to myself how much work that Chris Wilder's got to do. Can he get it all done in one window? I mean, I think that's pretty doubtful. But he's going to have to do something to get them ship-shape and competing next season. Yeah, they've still got a lot of advantage. They'll be, you know, a fairly big club in at a Championship level, Sheffield United. They'll still have some decent players, but it's going to be a big turnover. And, you know, Wilder spoke about before in his press conference about, you know, maybe bringing in, you know, trying to go for some sort of Premier loan players, if you like. But I look at that, and I think there'll be a lot of clubs will be in for them as well. So you're going to have to get your pitch right and keep your fingers crossed, because I think the sort of players that they're targeting, there'll be a lot of other clubs, maybe clubs that have come down and clubs that are pushing at the top end of the Championship are going to go for. So, yeah, it was a spirited, hearty performance, and they were fairly well organised on the day. But I think the main takeaway from that was still thinking how much work's got to be done next season, given in mind that the side that steps out on the opening day is going to be pretty different to the one that lined up at Goodison Park.
Yep. I think they're paying the price, really, of kicking the can down the road the last couple of years. You know, this change should have been made more gradually over that time, but because the investment wasn't there to bring in new players, still isn't, but their hands kind of being forced now. We probably saw that core. Well, we did see that core of players who, as Leon said, did such a magnificent job getting them into the Premier League last time, getting them ninth in the table. That core probably stayed together too long, and we're now at the stage where it's kind of unavoidable to break things up and start again. But I mean, if you look at the black and white of it, obviously it's been a record-breakingly awful season, but at least. I totally agree with Leon. It's not going to be a quick rebuild, and you know, people need to get their mindsets around that. But at least we're not hearing the sort of things that we were hearing from Andre Breitenreiter. You know, that is almost the norm when teams go down. You hear all these stories about toxic dressing rooms and players giving in. I mean, one thing you would say about Sheffield United, yes, there's definitely been some horror performances where you've really worried about the character of the side, but by and large, there has been that fight, not just on the pitch, but on the terraces as well. So that's something to start with. It's just highlighted that they simply haven't been good enough for the division in terms of ability. And, you know, as we obviously, there's been a lot of focus this season on the goals conceded, rightly so, when you've conceded 101. But that Everton game, you know, the Newcastle game recently has highlighted that there's just as many problems at the other end too. And as Leon says, they're going to need to get some goal scorers in, because there's not much there at the moment at either end of the field. It's really quite worrying in that regard. And yeah, I mean, we talked a bit last week actually about attracting loan players with regards to Hull and Middlesbrough, didn't we? And, yep. And I think clubs like to send players to those sorts of clubs to, as we said, sort of to play Premier League football. I think the way Sheffield United have got to sell it, and I think probably this is what they did with Doyle and McAtee, is send players to Sheffield United, and we won't necessarily play Premier League football, but we'll toughen them up. We'll, you know, and that is something that a lot of academy players need to learn. So that's a big selling point for them to try and get some of these players. Of course, that means by definition that you've got players who initially aren't that tough, aren't that hard into the Championship. So that's difficult. But yeah, I think it could be, you know, a couple of years to get this rebuild done properly. And I think the danger of the way this season has panned out is that I think a lot of people are going to be expecting clubs to yo-yo, that the parachute regiment will just bounce back, you know, like this season's largely have, and vice versa, that the teams that go up will go straight down. I don't think it's going to be that straightforward with Sheffield United. I think that parachute money is not much of it is going to be able to be spent on players of the quality of, you know, Harry Winks and Ethan Ampadu and players like that. It's going to be covering debts, investing in areas that haven't been invested in properly in the past, you know, going towards the cost of this new training ground, and not so much on quick fixes. But at least they're in the mindset that they know that they have a rebuild. I mean, effectively, it seemed to start when Chris Wilder came in December. So the thinking's already gone into it. You know, they've known for a long time that they were going to be in the Championship. So all the recruitment lists and everything should be very well developed. But just as last time they went down, it took them a couple of years to get back. I think it's going to be a similar project this time.
I think that's it. I think they'll do extremely well if they do manage to pull it off next year. But if they can, next season, if they can have a, you know, an element of positivity and progression, maybe nicking the playoffs will be around that area. And then the season after, when things have hopefully calmed down and they're trying to build something again, then have a bit more of a push in the second season. That's the sort of looking at it pragmatically. That might be the way it goes, which, you know, probably tying with Wilder's first era, wasn't it? They obviously got promoted. I think did they finish about 9th or 10th in the first season back in the Championship, and then they just went banging in that second season. So I think Chris will have that. Perhaps he won't say anything, but he might have that back in the back of his mind. But you just hope that supporters will be with him and sort of view the bigger picture in that regard as well, because, you know, with the best will in the world, it's not all about Sheffield United just bouncing straight back. I think, you know, there's an overview look at the club. There's things that need to improve and grow again so they can get into the best shape when they do get back. But let's just see what the summer brings first of all, because it'll be a big one.
Yeah. I mean, I think supporters want to see, and are right to want to see, a team built around people like Arblaster, Brooks, you know, Willis Sula, maybe Sam Curtis, who made his debut that day. But the payoff of that is that does need patience. I think it'll be worth it in the long run to get things sorted out and come up stronger. But there just has to be that understanding that just because this season, you know, all the relegated teams finished in the top four, it's not a given every year. This was a very unusual season in that respect, and people have to bear that in mind. And also that whilst they might not be getting the same amount of money, there are other clubs other than the relegated ones who are still getting parachute money, because it's a 3-year thing for, you know, for those clubs who've been up a couple of years.
And next we turn to Leeds United, who played out a 0-0 draw in the first leg of their playoff semi-final against Norwich City, in a game where both teams put on a particularly cagey display. There is still everything left to play for when the fixture heads to Elland Road. Now, Stuart, what was your assessment of the game, and how do you see it playing out when they do head to Elland Road?
Yeah, well, I mean, cagey's right. Playoff games tend to go one of two ways, don't they? Bonkers or cagey. Yeah. And I didn't see the Southampton West Brom game, obviously, because I was still working at Carrow Road, but it seems like that was pretty similar. I mean, I guess from a Leeds perspective, they've just basically wiped off the first leg and reduced it to a one-off game at Elland Road, all things equal, which is what you'd want. And as much as anything, I suppose it was a bit about stemming the bleeding after the difficult end to the season, the first clean sheet since April the 9th. It didn't really work up front. They played Routier as whatever you want to call him, a nine and a half, whatever, Harry Kane type role. But he's just not in great form at the moment, unfortunately. The ball was bouncing off him, and therefore all the other things... Yeah, so all the other things you're trying to do around him are obviously affected by that. For people to make runs from midfield, to come off the line, you need that ball to stick. And then, unfortunately, when they brought Pirlo on for the last half hour, there were still crosses coming over and nobody there. So they need to, however, whatever the solution is, they need to have worked that out on the training ground these last few days, because Patrick Bamford's going to miss the second leg as well. But at least there was that solid base. I mean, it's going to be a nervy Ellen Road if they don't score early. If they score early, could be great. But if they don't, or if Norwich score early, it's going to test the nerves. It's going to be a tough night. It's certainly not straightforward for them, despite what we're saying about them wiping away the away leg. And of course, we know what David Wagner's been down this route before. You know, it was three draws basically with Huddersfield in the playoffs, wasn't it? And two penalty shootouts. So he certainly wasn't fazed by a 0-0 draw. He wasn't looking at this as an opportunity missed. He was just looking at it as one ticked off along the way. Yeah, I think it's very much in the balance. It's exactly how you'd want it to be from a neutral perspective, and exactly how you wouldn't from a Leeds United perspective in that sense. But as I say, they've just got to get those attacking combinations right. They've got to either hope that Routier can find something, or that Pirro can come in. I mean, there's always the possibility of Matteo Joseph, who we talked about, you know, in April, about whether it was time to bring him into the side. I think because they didn't then, it feels like a big ask now to start him in this game. I mean, we were saying it at the time, but in hindsight, it looked like even more of an opportunity lost, not giving him a start somewhere along the line. Archie Gray as number 10 gave them that extra solidity they needed. Mm-hmm. So it did the job in that respect. As I say, it didn't really help the attacking stuff. But as I say, if the ball's bouncing off the centre forward, it's difficult for that number 10 to get forward and to play those passes. So I wouldn't sort of pin blame on Archie Gray for that necessarily. But I could see it being cagey again for however long it takes for that first goal. It could be half an hour, it could be an hour, and then it just going bang, and then just things going crazy. But I just don't know when that bang will be. I mean, it might even wait until the shootout. But you know, it's got to come at some time that night, and when it does, Leeds have really got to pounce and make the most of it.
Yeah, it's almost got to say, it doesn't really matter how they play and how they do it. No. Just do it, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
I think there's obviously the psychological scarring with Leeds. I mean, I'm old enough to have been at a few of these sort of playoff nights. I don't think they've won in the playoffs. I think is it the late 80s at home?
Yeah.
The last won a home leg. I went to the derby, second leg, when they had all the scarves on the seats before kickoff, and it was an unbelievable atmosphere. And then the game, yeah, it was a staggering game, wasn't it? And it just unravelled. I remember doing a game, a first leg against Carlisle, Preston as well. There's probably one or two others as well. And I just think if Leeds do find a way, whether it's on penalties, whether they play well, whether they nick a win, it'll just be so huge psychologically for the supporters as well. We all know about this talk of the playoffs. Now, at least if they do get to Wembley after getting through a home leg, that'll be significant, and you just hope it'll be a momentum turner in that regard for Leeds. And then we go on to sort of getting another monkey off the back if they do get to the final. You know, we all know about obviously they lost to Watford at Cardiff. It was a total no show. It was a pretty much of a no show against Doncaster, in truth. And you know, the better side won in 2008 by a country mile, it's fair to say. But you know, first things first. From a Leeds perspective, if they can manage to get through it, it doesn't matter how they do it, really.
Yep.
To play with a bit of style and a bit of swagger, then that's a bonus. But ultimately, you know, when you look at the scoreline, the history books, whatever, it's just got to, there's a winner and a loser, isn't there? And however it transpires, and just hope from a Leeds perspective, given the history, that they're going to be the ones who come out on top.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mentioned Wagner at Huddersfield. No Huddersfield fan cares that how they got through those playoffs, and nor should they. It's just about getting the job done.
Yeah.
You know, and if Leeds win it with a unlucky Norwich own goal in the 123rd minute, 1-0, that's fine.
It could be one of those, Stu. I mean, it could be the sort of the tone of the game could be. It could be quite intriguing, couldn't it? You know, if it's 0-0 with 15, 20 minutes to go, who's going to push?
Yes.
Who's going to be brave enough? Who might think, well, we'll leave a few gaps? It's the same with extra time as well. I mean, obviously, you were at the Crewe Doncaster game on we did both legs, but on the Friday, and not a great deal happened in extra time, did it? It was as if they sort of knew what was going to happen, and that could be the vibe again at... LMO, it could be in the other game as well at St Mary's as well. So that'll be fascinating to see how they both work out on the night. But you just hope that Leeds are going to be the ones who pull through, and I'm sure the supporters will be thinking it's overdue given the history.
Yeah, I mean, what you've got to hope, really. There's been a lot of talk the last couple of weeks with Daniel Farker about we're an inexperienced side and it's cost us and all this sort of thing. You've got to hope the classic cliche about the fearlessness of youth kicks in, and the fact that, you know, maybe some of these young lads aren't quite so aware of the bad history and all this sort of stuff. But, I mean, it is ultimately, I mentioned this last week, it is history, it is irrelevant, but it will impact the mood at Elland Road, and that's the thing. The supporters have got a really tough job to put that to the back of the mind and really get behind the players. Because I've got to say, obviously there was you know, issues after the game which police got involved in, but the atmosphere at Carrow Road was fantastic. You know, the Norwich fans really, really got behind their team, and we know what Elland Road is like when the Leeds fans get behind their team, but. You know, we're talking about human beings who are going to be nervous. Yep. So they really need to do all they can to put that behind them and get behind the team, because it will make a difference on the night.
Yeah. I think it's funny with Leeds and Norwich. I mean, they're not obviously neighbours geographically. There has been a little bit of an edge between them over the years. They obviously pushed for promotion together a few times, so that will probably add a little bit of spice as well. I just hope for the Welsh lads in Leeds' contingent. They had a massive, upset, didn't they, in the playoffs for the country and Padua, Don and James. And it'd be a nice story to go full circle if things can turn this time around. So there's lots of little narratives and subplots as there tends to be at this time of year in these sort of matches. And let's hope we're right about a few in a positive sense.
Yeah, of course, you know, one that leaps out, Dan James was the villain, if you can ever call anyone a villain for missing in a shootout.
Yeah.
He's going to have to
only
play late in the game, because he's not got 90 in mind, 120 minutes in his legs, so it's all set up for him to come on in either late in normal time or in extra time and do something special. He looked really good when he came on in the first leg. So that'll be a difficult one for Daniel Farker knowing when to bring him on, because if the game's tight after 75, 80 minutes, do you bring him on then and potentially have him on for 40 minutes or whatever? Or do you wait until extra time? But yeah, when he comes on with his pace, Farker mentioned after the first game about, you know, trying to use mobility and pace against Norwich defence, where their strengths lie elsewhere, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Leeds have got plenty of that, but James could certainly add something special when he comes on.
And finally for this week, we turn to Doncaster Rovers, whose run in the league playoffs came to an end when they fell to defeat in a penalty shootout with Crewe Alexandra. This was then followed by Doncaster Rovers manager Grant McCann telling his players, either come back to win the league or don't come back at all. Now, Stuart, can you see his frustrations, and what do the club have to do if they want to go on better next season?
A blind man could have seen his frustrations on Friday. They were laid bare after the match. He was so down, so flat. But even at his lowest ebb, there's always that underlying determination about Grant McCann, and that line about we're going for the league, and don't come back if you're not up for it. That summed him up, really. I mean, it was a really disappointing night. I mean, obviously last week I was overconfident. You know, we're talking about it. I was sure that they weren't going to mess it up.
I think most Doncaster fans were as well.
Exactly.
We were.
Yeah. And it took all of 16 minutes for that to be blown out of the water. And in a way, it just felt like their season as a whole, because once they got those 16 minutes out of the way, they were much the better team. But you can't keep giving people head starts and get away with it, you know. And ultimately, whilst they were the better team, as Leon sort of alluded to, talking about extra time, it played to the whole game. It didn't translate into enough work for the goalkeeper. You know, Luke Molyneux hit the post, but Max Trajcik didn't have much to do until the penalty shootout. But McCann was very telling. He was talking after the game about how he felt that, because we know Doncaster had a lot of injury problems at the start of the season, and he said that too many players turned up unfit for the start of pre-season. And when Leon and I started watching football, that's what you did. You turned up a couple of stone and overweight. You sweated it off. You went on long jogs. Nowadays, you're expected to come back in prime physical condition and just extend it. And McCann was saying that not enough of his Doncaster players did that. Obviously, he came in after the season had ended, so he hadn't given them fitness programs. They've got fitness programs now, and they're left in no doubt whatsoever that if they're, you know, not scoring the scores they need to on the bleep test and whatever other tests they do when they come back in June, July, they'll be gone by the start of September. So there's a real determination about McCann. And I think the most important thing for me about that night was, you know, Leon mentioned the overconfidence of the Doncaster fans, but there was no turning on them at 2-0 down. The support was magnificent, and it does feel like even just the presence of Grant McCann, then added to by what he's done since February, has really given that football club hope. I mean, we've both talked on this podcast the last couple of seasons about what a depressing place it's been sometimes, with just all hope extinguished. To see the place sold out, to see them really, really getting behind the team before the end, you just hope that some of those supporters who were there for the first time in a while are back in August, back in the same mood. And really pushing them, because it does feel like a club that has been on a real downward spiral, that has sorted itself out mentally. And obviously it'll be wasted if they have another start like they had to this season. But if they can hit the ground running, there's something that can really be snowballed then. And that club can get back to where it should be, because as McCann says, I've no arguments with him on that score. They shouldn't be in League Two. They're a better club than that. They're a fan base that deserves better than that. But there is to me, I came away, although you're disappointed, with genuine hope that it can come and that this wasn't the end of the story.
Yeah, I think when obviously a desperately tough one to take at the time, and I'm originally from Doncaster, and I know a lot of Rovers supporters, and they've certainly been feeling it. And but I think when the dust settles, that it was a remarkable end to the season. Just remember where they were at the start of February, you know, third from bottom. So, you know, almost could have produced one of the comeback stories in EFL history, really. But, you know, Stuart's right to say, I mean, they still have, it's desperately disappointing what happened on the night, but they've got momentum, they've got the mojo back, they've got something to take into next season. McCann's going to be fired up. He's had two defeats on penalties now in his two seasons at Rovers. Obviously, had one a few years before against Charlton, and then against Crewe. But they've got the mojo back. They can really attack it next season, and they're going to have to do some little bits of work in the summer. I think there's an issue in the goalkeeping department. Maybe bringing in another central defender. Can they get through with Wood and Anderson and a lower wall season? That might be something to consider. Maybe another forward. Obviously, young Craig will go back to Spurs, and he's been a great little player, hasn't he? And obviously, someone's going to have to step in there. But it's not going to be we've had before with Doncaster the last few seasons, big, massive overhauls. Don't think there'll be anything along those those lines. But yeah, I just think, you know, it just says look how far they've come, and they have they have been on a journey and travelled, and obviously they won't need any motivation next season. But it was just a funny feeling. I sort of looked on. I didn't expect what happened to happen, but I wasn't staggered as well. I had a little look on Facebook in the week before. There's a lot of Rovers supporters on there, a little bit of triumphalism, as if the hard part's done, sort of thing. And Crewe came into with absolutely nothing to lose there, had they? They've got God knows how many players were injured. Nobody really fancied them. And they just give it a crack, didn't they? And the first 20 minutes of the tie changed it. So, yeah, there was just that little thing, not so much arrogance among the Doncaster supporters, but as if, like, well, we've pretty much done it now, sort of thing. And a lot of, even some friends of mine, have been booking tickets, travel tickets to Wembley on the train. And, you know, mentioning things about buses and the like, and that all sort of feeds in. And I just wonder if, you know, if at the Crewe end they might have got wind of one or two of those sort of things. And yeah, they just never got going, did they? I mean, Stuart did the game. From what I saw, they did choke a little bit early on, and couldn't get it back. And I think the crowd were just so shocked, weren't they? Really, but. Yeah, as Stuart rightly again, he said it's great to see the keep. It's not the keep, more eco power. Eco power, that is. You know, packed full to the gills, and I can't think of too many other occasions where there's been as many home supporters there.
Last time was the manager was Grant McCann.
Yeah,
last will.
Yeah, and what was there, about 1,500 Crewe fans? So you're talking there about what? 10,000-11,000 Doncaster fans who turned out, and yeah, I think there have been a fair few who probably renew vows almost, you know, after you know, losing patience in the previous year or two. You just hope that, you know, they'll give them another go and be back on board in August. And obviously McCann's made the pitch, look, we're going all out for automatic promotion in the league next season. And like I say, they've got the mojo back, they've got their ambition, and even though it's a bitter blow, it'll drive them on. And if they do manage to do it next season, I'm sure they'll talk about the events of the night against Crewe and turning it around. So, yeah, they've got their raison d'être for next season already, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, playoffs can go one of two ways. You did look at the Yorkshire clubs in the recent Championship playoffs. Yeah. Huddersfield, Barnsley finishing third. Huddersfield finishing third, really disappointed playoffs.
Yeah.
Huddersfield end up fighting relegation, Barnsley go down. But then you look at Sheffield United, yeah, they missed out in the playoffs under Paul Heckingbottom, and the attitude is, which is exactly what McCann's been saying, well, okay, well, let's go automatically next season so we don't have to put ourselves through this nonsense again. And listening to McCann, the one that sprang to my mind as someone who's worked in the North East before was when Sunderland lost the Championship playoff final to Charlton in 98-99, and apparently the players promised exactly that on the bus.
Mm.
Right, we're not going through this again, and they won the league the next season with over 100 points. That was the definite vibe that Grant McCann was coming out with, and you know with him, it's not just words; he genuinely means it, and you know as well that he's ruthless enough, and I mean this as a massive compliment. Yeah. That he won't stand for people who are treading water or feeling sorry for themselves or what have you. He will only take with him those who are of the right mindset to put this right and to use the hurt, because hurt and disappointment and fear of disappointment can be really powerful tools in professional footballers. Yeah. I've been through that. I don't want to go through that again. And, you know, hopefully this time next year, we're talking about that as to why Doncaster Rovers have been automatically promoted.
Yeah. It almost feels the start of something, doesn't it? You know, if they manage to do, you know, almost write in the final chapter, few pages next season. I mean, you look at Barnsley in different respects. I know they won the second leg and showed a bit of fight at Bolton, but that just felt the end of something, didn't it?
Really, yeah.
Quite a few players are going to leave. There's a big sense of flux with the manager, and you don't really know which way that one's going to sort of go, do you? Whereas at Doncaster, it's sort of almost written for them. They know in cast iron what they need to do next season. They've got the hunger and desire. If they make the signings that Grant McCann wants, and he can get them ship shape early in pre-season, and they can start going again. So, but yeah, they've got the very, very, very disappointing, but they've got the momentum and sort of motivation back.
But just to go back to what we were saying earlier as well with regards to Sheffield United, and it probably applies to Huddersfield as well, you know, it's not a quick fix when these deep problems have set in, you know, and it looks like it's going to be a 2-year job for Doncaster at best to get things right, because you can't just flick a switch and put things right. And if you do, you know, as we talked about before, as Rosa were going to try to do, it can paper over cracks.
Yeah.
You know, I think we all got excited when McCann carried out this big overhaul in the summer, but the reality was it was always going to take a bit of time for so many new players to bed in, for, you know, the mindsets to change and all that sort of thing. But as Leon says, it feels like they're a big step on that path now, and it's just a case of keeping your head down and keeping going.
And I think McCann as well, just quickly what he said there about going for the league and the title. Yeah, there's going to be pressure on them. They're going to have a target on the back next season.
Absolutely.
You sort of look at the makeup of that division. You've lost Stockport. You've lost Mansfield. Mansfield have got a big budget. You've lost Wrexham, who were the sort of Hollywood side. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on the backs of Doncaster and Bradford.
Yeah.
You look at the teams that have come up from the conference, and Bromley and I can't remember the Chesterfield might have a little bit of a go for sort of top six, but it looks on paper it might not be as strong as it's been this season, next season, and you know, for both the sort of main York, which is going to be a bit of pressure, but you've got to embrace it, haven't you, really, when you're certainly Bradford and the Stuarts alluded to Doncaster when you're in this division.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobshall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.